Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Reunited and it feels so good.
3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com. And don't forget that landing page of mine. You go to the entertainment section on WGNplus.com. Look up Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and there you will find 97 previously recorded gems of podcasting purity and perfection. And the reason why is because this is 98. Episode 98 is we're counting them down to 100. It's ponderous, man, ponderous. When you got to do a dedication for a dying dog, is Don on the phone? No, Don's not on the phone, but Mick's on the phone. Are you on the phone, Mick?
I want a blank damn concerted effort.
and tell Don I want to see those pictures.
That's right.
That's an inside Casey Kasem joke, folks, that you can easily find on YouTube when Casey Kasem goes crazy and has a nice little conniption fit that never found its way to AT-40 for some reason.
Right, yeah, it never made it. It ended up on the editing floor, yeah. Although somebody ran off a dub of it first.
Thank God. Thank God they did.
Well, actually, I knew a guy who used to work on that show.
Did you know Don Bastani?
I don't know.
Is Don on the phone?
No, it was someone else, and I met him, I think, through college. I think he was doing a play, and I talked to him a few times, and he said that this was before that, you know, audio came out.
Yeah.
And he said Casey was very difficult to work with, you know, just a total stickler and all that. So when that audio eventually came out, I was like, you know what, I'm not surprised about this. So
And then, you know, and the best is, you know, this is the guy who, you know, not only was able, I mean, he was one of the best counters
right. We've
ever had. I mean, he really knew how to count backwards, which is,
sure. You'd
never think that was a huge, that would be a skill that would be worth millions.
It was.
Counting backwards. But then, of course, you could see why he was cocky and maybe egotistical, because, of course, he was also the voice of Shaggy.
Sure.
Hey, Scoob!
And you know that Shaggy was a pothead too.
Oh yeah, so I mean, I could see why he had such an inflated ego and you know, high regard for himself, because not only was he sitting there basically looking at a pre-printed Billboard chart, it's not like Casey went home every night and devised the chart.
Right, he didn't have, like, the algorithms and all that stuff.
Yeah, he wasn't calling radio stations and calling record stores to find out sales and radio play.
Right, he was doing a tally up and stats.
Yeah, he just basically grabbed a Billboard magazine that came out that week, went to the page for the top 100, and was so lazy that he didn't even do the top 100.
No.
He cut in the middle, and not even the middle. Less than half.
40%. He was only good for 40%.
40%. I don't know where you come from, but if I got a 40 on a test,
I'd be failing.
Yeah, that's F. But he turned that into greenbacks for sure.
Yes, he sure did.
Yeah, and I should. But I, you know what? I make fun of a Casey Kasem, but at the same time, I listen to that American Top 40 every week.
Oh yeah, the replays. Sure. Oh,
no, I mean when I was on originally.
Oh yeah. I did too. Every Sunday, sure.
I mean, it used to be, I can't remember what, it used to bop around in a few stations, but it was always on like Sunday mornings, like 8 a.m.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
7 or 8 a.m. It was always early. It was like a 2 or 3 hour show. And it was so crazy that, you know, and the funny thing is that initially when I first heard the show, I, you know, once again, who knew? if you, you're a little, I was a little kid. I was 8 or 9, 10 years old. I didn't know that this magazine, this trade magazine called Billboard, even existed.
Right.
Or that I could buy it at a newsstand.
Yeah.
And find out this. I didn't, you know. So I used to sit there for 3 hours with my, you know, biting my fingernails to see what was going to be the number one song, when I easily could have just gone to the store earlier.
And got a jump on it.
And got the magazine and read it and not had to sit by my man, you know, on my by my radio for 3 hours and listen to Casey doing some dedications to a dead dog. But yeah, wow, the naivete of the past, really. I mean, there's a guy that just basically, him and Don Bastani. Is Don on the phone?
That's right.
They you know, I'm sure that they sat around and because he was the producer, this guy Don Bastani, who came to prominence because of this rant that Casey said. Is Don on the phone?
Yeah.
And if you listen, because now they do replay them on satellite radio every Sunday and Saturday, I believe. And at the end of the show, it says American Top 40 was produced by Don Bastani. And you go, hey, there's the Don.
I hope he's on the phone.
I hope he's on the phone. And does he have those pictures I was supposed to see?
That's right.
But, you know, and so, you know, they sat around and he said, Don probably said to Casey, look, you know, we've got this amazing list here that someone else made up. We don't have to do anything except you just read them. We'll get the songs and we'll just, I'll give you a few little, you know, lead ins to some songs about Lobo or Terry Jacks.
Sure. Off Turner Overdrive.
Yeah, you know, and then you just go and say number 7 and then we'll play the song, and half the time they would fade the song out and wouldn't even play the whole thing.
Right.
But boy.
Randy Bachman, formerly of the Guess Who, now with Bachman Turner Overdrive, here is Taking Care of Business.
Well, and what Casey used to love to do, because, you know, remember in the 70s, especially when he started to do this, he did it into the 80s, but, and if you remember he even had a TV show in the 80s?
Oh, sure.
American
TV
Top
show, yeah,
10.
Yeah, the videos, yeah.
America's Top 10, and he would count them down.
Yeah, he cut it down even more. He cut it down to 10.
Yeah, then he had 10% of work. But what's so great was that, you know, he would sit there in the 70s, when, you know, the British invasion obviously had happened in the 60s, but it was still a kind of a unique thing of all the, because it was America's Top 40.
Yeah.
And so he always made a point to mention how many British acts were in this week's countdown.
Right.
So he would go, you know, or Canadian, like you always go, and that's Gordon Lightfoot.
That's Anne Murray.
Yeah, Anne Murray. She's the second Canadian in the countdown this week.
Canadian songbird.
Yeah, you know, Gordon Lightfoot came in earlier at 34, and like, who cares? And it was, and, you know, and here's Elton John, the seventh British act this week. It's like, who cares?
I know.
Oh,
he made it relevant.
Oh yeah, no, he had me.
All the time.
Not only did he have me then, he's got me now. Every Saturday morning, I listen at 10 o'clock, at 11 o'clock.
See,
I still listen.
It's not so funny now, is it?
And you know what's so funny about it, too? This is how sick I am. I listen every week from 11 to 1. They replay the original tapes of American Top 40.
Right.
And I listen. But on my computer, bookmarked, I have a website that has the entire entire 40 Billboards from 1955 through, I think, you know, I don't know if it's now or certainly into the 2000s. Every week.
Yeah.
Not even just the top 40. But if you remember, they had the top 40, then they had like some little subgroups like, you know, Bubbling Under.
Right. Songs you may be hearing soon.
Yeah.
Right?
And they even have all that. So this is how sick I am. While I'm listening to the countdown, I will frequently go online on this bookmarked website and already see what's coming up.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I can't wait, and yet I still listen to the whole thing for 3 hours. So I can, you know, as much as I would love to poke at Casey, hey man, there's something very addictive about counting backwards.
Hey, you know what? He found a niche.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked about this before.
Yeah.
Look at the niche that James Corden on CBS found with singing bad songs badly with famous stars in cars.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
So you find your little niche, you make your money, and you go on your way.
And, I mean, and then, of course, they got, and it was a very clever name, Carpool Karaoke.
Yeah, it's got that little rhyme. You know, yeah, there you go, a little alliteration.
It sounds cool, and yeah, there you go.
You find your little thing, and that's it.
Isn't that funny that
we're still looking for our little
niche. No kidding. I can't find that son of a bitch in niche. But yeah, so I don't know how it just goes to show. So I did was somehow fall into a Casey Kasem thing and say is Mick on the line instead of Don on the phone, and we went into 15 minutes on.
We go off on a tangent.
Yeah, well, first of all, I didn't even get a chance to formally introduce you. As I said before, Mick, the I referenced here is Mick Kaler, who is a longtime friend of mine and a radio veteran in the Chicago area, and in fact, as I'm counting them down to the 100th podcast since I started in May of 2016, Mick initially started with me as the first charter member.
Yeah, that's right, of the
Pop Culture Club, and then his regular world and schedule could not permit when we tape, so unfortunately Mick had to bail out. But every so often, he has an opening in his schedule, and every time that happens, I certainly try to take advantage of that because Mick and I go back to our college days. We did college radio together, and as I said, Mick went on to a very successful producing career here in Chicago, worked with Larry Lujack and Robert Murphy and Country Station US 99 and now still is contributing on a regular basis parody songs with a guy named Al Flash on the WGN Morning News. And
we just had one on this week for Sister Jean, the nun from Loyola.
Oh, yeah. What song did you use?
We took Wang Chung's Everybody Have Fun Tonight.
Oh.
And made it into Hey, This Nun Is All Right, or something along those lines. We did that. So
You didn't use
a video for it, and they ran that.
You didn't use David Bowie's Gene Genie?
No, we didn't do that. I was thinking about Billie Jean. There were a lot of different Gene songs to go with, you know?
Sister Jean is not my nunner.
Yeah, there's been a lot to do with that. We've got some other things that Channel 9 will hopefully be airing in the next couple of weeks. We've got a couple of other things in the works, but otherwise just doing our usual stuff. So that's it.
Well, I wanted to talk to Mick because he had the time, and it's ironic that you have your availability at this point because it really to talk to you about these two topics that are both timely as well as a connection that we have had because we have spoken about these in previous times, and here is some new information on a new basis, timely basis here. So it's actually couldn't have worked out any better. Topic one I wanted to talk about a couple of weeks ago on the podcast here, I was talking about how rock and roll, sadly, in my estimation, is really starting to become a niche musical form, especially if you watch the Grammys. It's very obvious, clearly, that not only is hip-hop and rap popular, it is really the dominant musical force right now, and there's no question about that. And you know, on radio and the top 10, we're just talking about the Billboard top 10, it's mostly either dance-related or hip-hop-related artists and songs. And it's just amazing how rock and roll, which was so dominant and so culturally significant, starting in the 50s and certainly with the Beatles in since the 60s, it's been ongoing. But it's clear that rock and roll is beginning to lag. And my prediction is it won't take very long, maybe a decade if less, certainly when some of the classic rockers begin to either officially retire or sadly pass away, which, as I said, won't be much longer than 10 or 15 years. I don't care how good shape Mick Jagger's in. He's still going to be 85 or 90.
Yeah, he's not going to last, keep performing and all that. Exactly,
yeah.
Right, or die, right.
And so it just seems as if rock and roll is impossible as it may have sounded 10 or 15 or even 20 years ago to say that rock would become a niche musical genre. By the way, that are going go the same route that perhaps a big band did from the, was so big in the 30s and 40s and then lost its footing in the 50s when rock, and same way with jazz, which was very big in the 50s and 60s, and then rock and roll just steamrolled over it. And while both those are still, you know, very popular, and especially jazz, very vibrant musical forms, they certainly are not as dominant as
they used to be.
And right. So that was the kind of the point I was making, that it won't be long before rock and roll kind of falls into that same kind of category, as crazy as that may seem to many of us who grew up with it.
Yeah, well, and to put it into perspective, and I think you and I have talked about this before off the air, that, I mean, the Fender Guitar Company is bankrupt, okay? Kids are not going out, they're not watching, and they're not seeing whether it's Tom Petty or Bruce Springsteen or Bob Seger, you know, playing on a TV show and going, ooh, I want to play a guitar like those guys do. I want to go to the music store and learn how to do this.
Yeah, they're buying mixers and Beats headphones.
Right, exactly. and software programs where you can just do it all at home.
Yeah, Pro Tools and a rhyming dictionary.
That's it. That's all you need now.
But here's one of the signs that I talked about that at length about two or three podcasts ago. And this recently, this was very interesting, and I think just adds a little more evidence to my thesis, if you will, to maybe quote the late Dr. Milt Rosenberg, my thesis about the decline of rock and roll in the mainstream is proved, I believe, this week. So this week, and it'll be a little later when we air this, but... So the Lollapalooza, which is huge here in Chicago, it's been here since 2005 in Grant Park.
4 days, yep.
And has become a major tourist attraction and major kind of, chamber of commerce, you know, flag in the, waving in terms of bringing Chicago on the map. It's now become a major musical festival. And it had been around for years. It was... founded by Jane's Addiction's Perry Farrell.
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
It used to be a very small kind of hippie thing, and actually went out of business in the late 90s.
Yeah, exactly.
And then a huge promoting company bought it, resurrected it, and really put a lot of money behind it, and chose Chicago as its home base. And as you just mentioned, it started as a three-day festival for several years, and over the last couple of years, was expanded to 4 days because it was so popular.
Yeah, Thursday through Sunday.
Well, interestingly, the four-day passes for this year's Lollapalooza, which runs from August 2nd through the 5th, a couple of weeks ago, they went on sale. And, usually in, 2014 and 2015, before the lineups back then, this is only two or three years ago, before the lineups were even announced, the event would sell out.
Right, exactly. People wanted to get in on all 4 days of the event, not even knowing the acts that were going to play.
Yeah, within an hour, they would sell out. And even, in 2016, when they expanded to 4 days, it sold out in less than an hour. And... last year's 2017's even sold out in 2.5 hours.
Right.
So this was clearly, a very popular thing. But what was interesting, if you look at the evidence here, as, amazing as that is to sell out, two or three years before without even knowing who was going to be there, you have noticed that while it's still sold out, it was not as fast or as frantic as in past years. And this year,
the thrill is kind of dying down a bit.
Well, that's the thing. And so this is the point where it really started to make some headlines, especially here in Chicago, since it's such a big cultural event for the summer and does bring people from all over the country, if not over the world, because of the enormity of the event and all the bands, like 180 bands, which is just outrageous. But as of 3 or 4 days of sales, the event still hadn't sold out. Now, it's been longer since. I haven't gotten any new information if it's sold out. And once again, this is a podcast, so it's going to live forever. But my point is that after 3 or 4 days, not 3 or 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
3 or 4 days or almost a week later after the tickets went on sale, the event still hadn't sold out. And that doesn't mean it won't.
Right.
But clearly, the whatever attraction to the point of fanaticism that surrounded Lollapalooza, it looks like a little of the Lollapalooza luster is beginning to fall off, which I think, as I said, kind of supports my point that rock and roll may be just slowly. It's not going to be a fast death,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it seems to be gradual.
Well, I think so, too. I see that happening. And the other part of it is, keep in mind, Lollapalooza only happens in Chicago. It doesn't go all over the country, okay?
Right.
But so people are coming from other places in the country. But I think that at some point, there's a couple things into play, and one of them is you go there, you get all hyped up for this thing. It's an event. Like you said, it sells out before you even know who's going to play. What if you buy tickets, and it's like, I don't know any of these groups, or I don't like these groups, and why isn't so-and-so playing? And I think there's some of that, and I think at some point, it's like anything else. It's like, you know what? Maybe this isn't worth all the trouble of traveling to Chicago and booking hotel rooms and sitting out there in the smelly fields. I always joke that Lollapalooza, the phrase should be, come for the crappy unknown bands, stay for the body odor, okay? Because it's just, you know, such a mess out there. And I think maybe people just realize, you know what? The event itself, and as you said, the music itself, maybe this just isn't worth it.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that in years past, and even to some extent, you know, Lollapalooza being one of the major festivals, there's many others around the country. There's Bonnaroo, which is near Tennessee, and there's Coachella, which is in California, and there's been other ones, the Horde Festival, Ozfest. Remember several in the 90s, there was a Lilith Fest, which was all made of, you know, female sure. acts. So there's always been festivals, and of course, in Europe, there's the Glastonbury Festival and some other ones, and that's where a lot of the festivals actually started were you know out in the UK over the last several years. So they've become events, and then of course in this selfie world, it's not what you do, it's where you do it, and to show everybody else that you're doing something cool. And so I think Lollapalooza and some of these other kind of festivals have become more of events, and they've become music events,
right?
But there's been so who knows? To your point, maybe the event and the specialness of it is beginning to wear off. Now, one thing that's interesting, Bonnaroo, for instance, they have seen their ticket sales, much slower than in previous years. Coachella still sells out, I think, for the main reason that we were just discussing. It's in California. All celebrities go. And
and part of it is just seeing who the celebrities are going to be there, and there's big acts there.
Yeah, it's kind of the cool place to be if you're in L.A. and you go and you sit in your cabana. And for, you know, even if you're a big star for 3 days, you dress like a hippie. And you, once again, probably don't know any of the bands that are there, but I'm sure they have an amazing VIP tents there.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's Coachella is a little of an anomaly just because it's L.A. It's a whole different kind of scene. But now what I found interesting in reading about the possible, as you said, maybe just some of the idea of going there for 3 days and it's a bunch of people. And as I said before, 180 bands over 4 days.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. I mean, it's impossible. Like you said, most of the bands you don't even know. I don't care how much you're into music. And even in our heydays of being into the music of the moment, I don't think I could have named 180 bands that I wanted to
see. Exactly, yeah.
So,
or wanted to stay for 180 bands. I remember the one time I went to when the Police opened their tour in 83 at Comiskey Park.
Right.
And it was the Police and Joan Jett and The Fix and A Flock of Seagulls and Ministry. That was more than enough for me, you know, like five bands in one day. And I was like, okay, I don't want to hear music for a while. Okay?
Hey, could you imagine that?
A couple days off.
Yeah, so now imagine 4 days.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially in the Chicago heat, which is most of the time in August.
Right, and it's in the mud.
Yeah.
And the smell and everything else, yeah.
But actually what's been interesting, which I wonder if these are real components and real reasons why maybe there has been less of an attraction for Lollapalooza this year, or if it's just, what we've been talking about, the decline of rock and the popularity and maybe just the luster being gone. One of the knocks against it is that aside from Bruno Mars, He's the only act that has never played Lollapalooza before, but most of the headliners like Jack White and The Weeknd and Arctic Monkeys and The National have all played before. So
right.
It's kind of like, okay, been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was always a lure of Lollapalooza, is that they'd get these headliners that hadn't played in a while.
Sure.
And these big acts or these up-and-coming acts. And this year it feels like most of the acts are just kind of a retread.
Right.
But what I found most interesting, which I don't know if, and you tell me, what they're saying is that it's a legitimate idea to bring up as a possible cause, but I wonder how much it really is. Some people in the industry are saying that the mass shooting in Las Vegas
I've been thinking about that too.
Yeah, in 2017, in October, where 58 people were killed, is kind of spooking people to go to these big outdoor, musical festivals that are in an open space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about where, in Grant Park, and that was when that happened in Vegas, the first thing I thought of was Lollapalooza. Because it's very similar in that Grant Park is right in the middle of downtown. It is surrounded by high rises, just like this area in Vegas was, where that shooter, shot from outside of a hotel room.
Well, the other thing you got to remember is, and people may be thinking of this as well, is about the mass shootings. That guy who did that in Vegas, he stayed in Chicago,
yeah,
at the Blackstone Hotel,
and he was kind of casing the.
He was
the
kind
situation.
Of, and I don't know if he was really planning to do it in Chicago, but he may have been looking at, okay, here's a big festival, here's a lot of people.
Yeah.
You're looking at the specs of what could possibly be done for something like that. And to be honest, I think that may play into it a little bit. I mean, people still go, to concerts. You go to the United Center, the Allstate Arena, whatever, or some festivals. But there could be some of that, hey, is some guy going to be up in a hotel room somewhere, plucking us off like so many sitting ducks?
I'm sure they're going to have heightened security.
Sure.
I mean, they have to.
Do,
yeah. I mean, they certainly have to make that concession and view that as a possible risk now that it's out there and now it's up for possible copycats, which would, which is certainly scary. But I'm wondering, I've gone to concerts since. I haven't gone to any outdoor concerts that I can think of. But, let's go in the Wayback Machine and say you were 24 years old right now.
Right.
I don't know if it's completely possible, but do you think that if you were 25 and you were the music fan that you always have been, and you were a previous Lollapalooza, patron, do you think that that shooting like that may have deterred you from going? Would you have stopped? I don't think I would have. I don't think it would have. I mean, it makes me take a step back.
Right. Well, the other part you brought about the heightened security, and I'll give you a great example, Jim. This was back in 79 when The Who played at the amphitheater, and I had tickets to see the show. And that was on a Saturday night. The previous Monday night before then was that stampede in Cincinnati with the festival seating.
Right.
And there was, of course, concern like, oh, my God, what's going to happen in Chicago? Well, first of all, I wasn't really that worried. I was going to go no matter what.
And people, we should just say, for people that don't know, there's a Who concert. It was general admission, so there was no seat. So the people basically were waiting outside. And
when first come, first serve seating.
And when the door, it was an indoor stadium, not an outdoor stadium.
Yeah.
But when the doors opened, everybody just rushed to get to the stage, and there was a stampede. And was it like eight people?
8 or 11 people.
Yeah, there were.
Died
they
were trampled to death.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was going to go to the show anyway, and first of all, I felt safe because every seat in the amphitheater was a reserved seat. But I also, getting back to your thing about heightened security, the amphitheater even put out notices, or Jam Productions did, because they were putting on the show. They said, hey, every door in that place is going to be open with, taking tickets. There's going to be no need to rush in. So I almost felt safer because this terrible tragedy in Cincinnati happened a few days earlier. And I'm like, well, we'll be okay because we got reserved seats. Everybody does. And they're going to have lots of open entrances to get into through the gate. So there won't be any worry about getting trampled to death trying to get in.
Yeah, no, that no, and like I said, I mean, I've certainly been, and I've been at some concerts, and I've even, you know, and big events like that where it, where especially if you're down front in a mosh pit kind of a situation, where it does get scary. I mean, and there's sometimes where I've been in major kind of crowd things where sometimes you almost feel like your feet are not even on the ground.
Right, you're almost being lifted up against the crush.
Like
right?
You're being pushed just in that crush, and it is not. It is a scary feeling, and you really are helpless. Now this is different in terms of the the Vegas shoot, because this was sadly and just a deplorable act of just almost like shooting fish in a bucket.
Right,
just a guy up in a high rise just picking people off. Without any clue that this was happening, and they're just standing there. I mean, so that was certainly different than a stampede, but it's the same thing, as you said, about security and issues. I wonder how much that plays into the minds of potential Lollapalooza goers. But and then they've also mentioned something that while it certainly draws a lot of people from around the world and certainly around the country, it still is for the most part a Chicago event. And I would assume that most people come from Chicago, and they're saying that other festivals around the city in the summer have taken on a lot more popularity, most notably the Pitchfork Festival, which is like on the south side a little and has a lot more kind of underground cutting-edge bands, and maybe cutting into the popularity or the ticket sales of Lollapalooza as well. But to get back to my original kind of thesis here about rock and roll kind of losing its edge, I still come back to the fact that Lollapalooza needs 180 bands and 4 days,
right,
to sell. You know, and I think they say what, like 200,000 people maybe attend.
Yeah, as far as the 4 days go, right?
Yeah, and all I know is that it takes 180 bands and 4 days to get 200,000 people. And I would argue that the Rolling Stones, for instance, in two or three shows, one band can still draw that number of people.
Yeah, they can fill out Soldier Field.
Yeah.
Or, the time Springsteen played Soldier Field.
Yeah, so, so that's
one guy and one band.
One band, still, when you look at the classic rock acts of the Stones and the Who, and as you said, Springsteen and other people like that. And like you said, I mean, even someone like Elton, who, is selling, I just saw an article that his farewell tour that will start in September is right now the number one selling ticket demand on StubHub.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, here's a guy who's, 71 years old and is, is beating everyone, young acts as well as veteran acts. But it just seems to me that, as I said earlier, this is more proof of if it takes 180 bands of today's rock and roll bands, because everything is so fragmented and you can argue about the quality of it, as opposed to the classic rock bands, those legendary bands, as I said, like the Who and the Stones and other ones, who can still command amazing, loyalty,
right,
and fill up not just arenas, but, 70,000 seat stadiums. I think the Stones are playing in the UK this summer, and they're going to fill up stadiums.
Right. Well, you have to look at it too. Okay, they're still around, whether it's the Stones or the Who, whoever you want to talk about as far as the quote classic rock acts. They've been around forever, and for years they had a long body of work of music where it was vibrant music. Whereas, say, these groups that play Lollapalooza, the National, I mean, how many records they have out, or whomever else you want to mention that's on that Lollapalooza thing, there isn't this long chain of, oh, gosh, there's so many songs there that they can play. It's like you don't have that. And maybe over the years they'll have that, but I don't see it happening. I don't see the longevity in today's artists as opposed to, when we were growing up. And I'll take it even a step further. Pearl Jam is probably the last I can think of, and Pearl Jam played Lollapalooza years ago, okay? Look at Pearl Jam. they're pretty much a classic rock act now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
And
that's, they were 20. Don't forget, in the early 90s, that's 20. That's 20 years ago.
Yeah.
That's 25 years ago.
When they came out.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you've got them. Who else do you have besides them that is a, quote, rock act that's been around since then that is still vibrant today? And they're not there.
No, no, there really isn't. And you know, what I'm just wondering is when you look back, like I said, think about 180 bands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look, if you go on the Lollapalooza website, because I did in preparation for this, they have this, you know, they add that they would, you know, with
all the names listed,
the list,
a big colorful thing, right?
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, it's your eyes, you can't even read it.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even believe that they book that many bands. I mean,
right.
And to be honest, I mean, I would love to see what 180 bands, even back in the 70s or 80s, would have looked like. You know, I mean, would there have been that many as well? Would there have been, you know, Terry Jacks and Three Dog Night and, you know, Jigsaw and some of these one-hit wonders? Because after a while, how could you find 180 bands?
Yeah, well, again, and you go back to this, what you're talking about before, about Fragment, okay? It's like, well, you're in this kind of music, but you're not into that kind of music. Things were a lot more broad when, you know, you could be into Bob Seger or John Mellencamp or whomever and be like, well, I like that, but I like some other stuff too that's kind of in that same order, whereas now things are so specified.
Yeah, no.
It's a different game, and it's a different appeal that it's more niche pinpointing as far as marketing and appeal to crowds.
Yeah.
So it's a different deal.
Well, like I said, I found it interesting because I just talked about this just out of, you know, my own observation. And
yeah.
And then when this Lollapalooza information, and so once it, so it was nice. I mean, I can't make a completely, you know, direct correlation, but certainly, you know, it adds, as opposed to just a would have been my own opinion. Suddenly, there's some empirical, you know, facts here.
Data.
Yeah, that is so. Hey, I mean, now is it? Who knows? Maybe next year with a different lineup, it'll sell out in an hour. Who knows? But I have to say, if it continues to go, you know, in this kind of trend, I'm sure it's going to sell out. There's still going to be, you know, hundreds of thousands of people there over 4 days. It's not a flop,
right?
By any means. But when you start to see, you know, that those ticket sales not happening in those kind of record breaking kinds of things, I would make a prediction that in the next year and moving on, I guarantee you start to see more hip hop and DJs at Lollapalooza. I mean,
and they have some now too.
Yeah, but I'm betting that they are seeing a trend here,
right?
And they are not going to let that trend continue. They invest too much money in Lollapalooza.
Sure.
And as I said, it you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if the tickets sell out in 5 minutes or in 4 months. You know, as long as they sell the tickets and get
the
money,
get the butts through the gates.
Yeah, it's a successful venture. But
yeah,
it does point to the popularity and the excitement. And I think you have to wonder, is it the event or is it the genre? And it might be a little of both. You know, so, I mean, you know, the stake is not in rock and roll's heart yet. I'm not closing the coffin on it, but I am sort of at least waving a hand or a little flag to say, you know, gang, this could be the beginning of the end. And as crazy as that may sound to those of us who grew up during this time, I mean, to think that rock and roll would become like a niche, like jazz, where you go, yeah, where if you want to impress somebody at a party, you go, yeah, I'm into rock.
Right.
Instead
of... Ooh, you're so eclectic.
Yeah, I'm into jazz. You know how it is now. I'm into jazz, or I'm into folk music, you know. I mean, once again, think about folk in the early 60s. I mean, with Dylan and all those people, that was a major force, and then it just went away.
Well, and like I said, I think a big part of it is just that everybody has such individual tastes whether it's an underground band or somebody you want to see at Lollapalooza or someone you watch on YouTube, there isn't this blanket thing. I mean, I remember the days when I worked at the record store in Elmhurst. Everybody came in to buy Michael Jackson Thriller and Madonna Like a Virgin and Springsteen Born in the USA and Huey Lewis Sports. Everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it was age-wise, male, female, everything. And we don't have that kind of common denominator appeal really with anybody right now.
No, no. So, well, like I said, long live rock, as the Who said, but I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I need it every night.
Right. So another interesting topic, which you and I talked about over a year ago.
And this one I know you're very excited about.
Yes, and I'm very excited and very depressed. So those who have been listening to the podcast with any regularity will know that last summer and even earlier before that, I was a major, major opponent of the Cook County soda pop tax, which was implemented in Cook County. And it was implemented for a penny per ounce of any sugary beverage, which basically was pop.
16 ounce, you pay 16 cents more. You get a case, you got to pay a lot more.
So it was an extra penny based on whatever size you bought. So to Mick's point, if I bought a case, you know, that's 24 cents more. You know, on every can.
Yep.
So there goes whatever sale is gone, you know. And so, but at the end of the day, they were trying to sell it as a health prevention kind of tax to say, well, if we tax this, then, you know, then people won't drink as much pop. Because 12 ounces times 24, look at how much money that's going to be extra. They're not going to spend $4 or $5 more on a case.
Right.
Well, I think most people came out and saw what it was. It was a money grab.
Because, it was a money grab to shore up some budget issues.
Yeah, Cook County we had some major and still does have some major holes. And of course, the president of the Cook County Board, Tony Preckwinkle was threatening job losses and you know all this doomsday if they did not pass the pop tax and get all this revenue that could come. Because as I said, think about it, 12 ounce cans. So that's 12 cents times 24.
Right.
So there's a lot of money there per to add it on to whatever the case of pop costs.
And this was also happening to people who went through the drive-thrus of the McDonald's or the Burger Kings. All soda got that extra tax.
So in a very, I would say, actually a very heartwarming and kind of inspirational revolt, because so often, how often do you see a tax ever repealed these days?
No,
or any.
Once they get it in, they're happy to have it.
Yeah, or any kind of governmental program. Look how hard it has been. You know, Trump ran on repealing Obamacare, and as much as there was all this hoopla about it, he couldn't repeal it. Once a governmental organization or a tax is implemented, it is very hard to get it taken out. And yet the voters of Cook County made themselves heard to the point that they went to the commissioners of the Cook County Board, made phone calls, you know, threatened to go to the ballot box, and really were staging revolts. And while it was passed in late 2016, a year later, on December 1st, 2017, it was gone, off the books.
Repealed, no more tax.
And so in between that time, Mick and I were talking about it and joking about it, and I said that that I was going to go and take, as a revolt in the spirit of the Boston Tea Party, that I was going to go down and take a bunch of cases of pop and dump them in the Chicago River and carbonate the river. Instead of turning it green for St. Patrick's Day, I was going to carbonate the river. And remember, we were going to create a group called Soda.
That's right. Well, Save Our Drink.
Stop Our Drink. Was it Stop or Save? Yeah.
It was a good cause.
It was a good cause. But now, it goes to show you, though, we weren't really all that committed to it because we can't remember what Soda stood for.
Right.
But we did have Soda. And I did threaten. Now, the funny thing is that, you know, we were talking about this, and this whole idea of you know, dumping the pop in the river just came up in that, in the moment. I thought of that, and we just kind of made fun of it and made a joke of it. But then another radio station here in Chicago actually did it.
Yeah, they took pictures. They put it on social media. They were dumping their pop in the, river.
I know they stole that idea because I actually talked about that idea to somebody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it became kind of a joke, and then it became kind of a, you know, a little fun thing. But I was very heartened by the fact that the people stood up and said, no, we're not going to, we ain't going to take it, in the words of Twisted Sister. And they actually scared some politicians enough to actually, you know, reverse the decision.
Right.
Now, what I was saying at the time, I said, wow, you know, this is so unpopular. And the Cook County president, Tony Preckwinkle, was pushing this and, as I said, threatening the job losses if they didn't pass it and things like that. And I said, my gosh, you know, with an election coming up, that was last year, this is a campaign issue that's made for a challenger. I mean, this is something that people were feeling in their pocketbooks and were feeling emotionally and actually, you know, turned out to change. So I'm sitting there going, wow, you know, I think Tony Preckwinkle is going to be in trouble come March 20th, 2018,
when she's about this tax. Yeah,
when
she's
up.
You know, it was repealed to tick people off.
Yeah. You know, and I said, whoever runs against her, if I'm running against her, every time I go out to a campaign stop, I've got a can of pop in my hand.
Yeah.
To remind people.
See what she did? She put you through that?
Yeah. And every time I'm at a podium with a bunch of microphones, there are just cases of pop around me.
Yeah.
At all times. And every campaign stop I make, in fact, the podium would be made of there you go. See, here we go again. I would have, my podium and every campaign stop would have been made of cases of pop.
And the microphone could look like a bottle of pop.
Exactly. It would have been a can. It looked like a can. And I would have had a podium there to remind people, remember what happened here. And remember what you did. And you were mad as hell, and you weren't going to take it anymore, and you didn't take it, and you beat the system. You beat the man. And so I figured, you know, she's going to be in some, even though she's the incumbent and she's, you know, popular to some extent, I'm like, wow, this could be a major issue for a challenger to really topple her. And wow, talk about not taking advantage of a potential political advantage here in a campaign. There's an alderman named Bob Fioretti. He ran against Tony Preckwinkle and ran an invisible campaign.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was running.
Yeah. Now this wasn't a primary, so now she'll be running. But I don't even know if there's a Republican, opponent.
Right.
But he ran an invisible campaign. I didn't see one peep about the pop tax.
Nope.
Which was, as I said, December 1st is when it was repealed and eliminated. That was only 3 months ago, 4 months ago.
And that'd be the kind of thing you'd want to pounce on as far as the weakness for Tony Preckwinkle.
And so I was very shocked to see that Cook County voters on March 20th, when they went to the polls, Tony Preckwinkle, who looked very vulnerable because she was way out in front on this pop tax, and as I said, was threatening layoffs and all this gloom and doom and social services and doctors or nurses, all these people, you know, essential people getting laid off and fired and not having enough facilities open to take care of people. There was all this gloom and doom if we didn't have this pop tax. I didn't know how important pop was to our survival. But wow, she won 61% of the vote.
Yeah.
I can't understand how that can happen. I mean, I'm not saying that she does a bad job, but I'm surprised that there was all this hoopla and all this grassroots, you know, to repeal this tax. And then when you're at the ballot box where you can really show your voice and make your point made, and she, it was as if this pop tax fiasco never even happened.
Well, I think 61% as soon as it was peeled back, as far as that goes, and people just kind of put it in their rearview mirror.
I mean, 61%, that's a landslide.
Yeah.
And so what gets me, too, is that, you know, we're always talking about, you know, oh, they're all bums and get rid of them all. And we're always complaining and we're always complaining. And yet, we rarely change.
Yeah, nobody wanted to make that change and go to the polls and vote her out.
No.
Or at least make it more of a run. And like you said, her opponent didn't even make it. He didn't even make it a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that was just a token campaign. But my gosh, I mean, if I ever saw that guy, I would say, what the heck did you not do?
Right, you had somebody vulnerable and you just let it go.
But I can't believe now. I mean, you can answer this or not, because it's really funny. Do you? A lot of people have this weird thing, where they, because I talked to a lot of people. I did vote, and I always vote. But a lot of people say, "Well, I don't vote in the primaries because, well, you know, that's I'll wait until the official candidates for each party are there. I don't vote in the primaries. That's kind of, I always do, but.
Yeah, because I want my voice heard no matter what, whether it's the preliminary.
So did you vote? Did you vote in the primaries?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to ask you voted for or whatever, but my point is at least you did vote.
Right. It's like two blocks from my house. It's real easy to deal with, so it's just, you know.
Yeah.
It's just something that should be done.
Well, this was kind of interesting, too. So this year, you know, we always vote, to your point, about being close to the house. So we usually vote at this church all the time, which is about a block and a half away from the house. And so I had to laugh because they sent me my voting card, like my new voting card.
Yeah.
And usually, you know, you just take a look at it and you cut it out and you throw it in your wallet and you don't even pay attention. Well, for whatever reason, thank God I did, I happened to look at the address for the polling place.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, wait a minute.
They moved you?
Yeah, that's a different polling place. So thanks to our friends at Google Globe or World, whatever the hell that's called.
Google Maps, yeah.
Yeah, Google Maps. I go, wait a minute. I go, because it was still at a church, but I'm like, wait, that's not the same church. And that's not the same street because it's right. This is a main street, and this, you know, this is a side street. So I went on the Google Maps, and sure enough, I typed in the address. It's like, whoa, wait a minute, that's a church down the other street. It's not much that far, you know, farther away. But I would have probably gone to my old place.
Right, you show up, and they're like, "We don't have your list here, sir."
Yeah, I mean, they would have tried to give me communion, but they wouldn't have given me a ballot. You know, but so that's another thing. It's like, hey, gang, you know, you need to let people know. If I hadn't looked at that, I would have went to the wrong. I wonder if anybody did.
It's possible, sure.
Yeah. But, you know, it's so funny because one of the great, we were talking about classic rock and, you know, one of the classic Who songs that we always hear on Chicago's classic rock is Won't Get Fooled Again.
Right.
And basically, I don't know how many people really, I wonder how many people know what that song's about as opposed to just know the power chords.
And the instrumental, right?
And the instrumental and the Daltrey scream.
Yeah.
And all those great kind of, you know, rock, you know, cliches, I guess, which you can say what they are right now. But, I mean, it's just such a powerful song in its sound and its performance and its production. But I wonder if people really, even if you're screaming the words out, do they know what that song's about? Because basically, you know, the classic line there is, you know, meet the new boss.
Same as the old boss.
Same as the old boss. And the goal is, you know, I'll get on my knees and pray that we won't get fooled again.
And yet we did, because there's the change. And
right.
The change isn't any change at
all.
Yeah,
the change. So the get on my knees and pray is that we as a society won't get fooled again by the same by a politician of a different name.
Yeah.
Who pretends to be changing, but at the end of the day, there's no change coming at all.
Right.
And that's where we won't get fooled again, you know. But I don't know if people even realize that's a political song.
Yeah.
But here again, we got fooled again.
That's either that or people just weren't paying attention, okay?
Now, was it just me? I don't know how much you pay attention to these, but did you notice any in the last 3 months, anybody about the talk about the pop tax at all?
No.
Isn't that crazy?
Nothing. And I think the only thing that in this primary that really dominated was the race for governor. That's what everybody was paying attention to.
Well, what I love too about the race for governor here in the state of Illinois, which is in major, major financial problems. We've got so much debt and so much pension obligation in this state, basically because for the last 40 or 50 years, in a corrupt government to create patronage, which gives jobs away for votes, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They created all these jobs that had these ridiculous pensions and these ridiculous benefits that people would want. So I'll give you this great job that has a great pension after 25 years and a great, medical benefits if you vote for me.
Right. And by the way, in the meantime, the state's going to go broke.
Yeah. So once again, while it helped these politicians of the last 40 or 50 years with these patronage armies to vote for them and almost make most of the elections here almost moot.
Yeah.
They also now all those eggs are coming to hatch because all these pensions that they gave away 25 or 30 years ago are now being paid off.
Yeah.
And so here we are. Unable to pay them and we're borrowing money and the billions. And so here's Illinois. What I love about Illinois is everybody, once again, I don't want to get too political here, but what I find interesting is our current governor was an inexperienced billionaire, Bruce Rauner. The Democrats in the primary just elected to run against him an inexperienced billionaire.
Right. And the other one running, Chris Kennedy, was an inexperienced, I'm sorry, in his own right was, inexperienced billionaire.
And our president, who everybody hates, was an previously unelected, inexperienced billionaire.
Yeah.
So I don't understand, in the last year and a half, everybody hates Trump, and you can hate him or love him, whatever you want to do. But here's a chance to elect, now you're going to the ballot box for the first time since the presidential election. And even, and so Democrats hate everything Trump does. And then Democrats voted for an inexperienced billionaire, J.B. Pritzker, who is an heir to the Hyatt Hotel empire.
Yeah, well, it was funny because with his race for governor, I called it the "Who Wants to Be the Millionaire Governor?" And it's not because the governorship makes you a millionaire, because it doesn't. It's because these millionaires, and like you said, with Rauner, billionaires, they're the ones running. It's like, really, you really want to do this? I mean, this is the last thing in the world I want to do if I had that kind of money. Okay?
And I mean, and the other side of the coin is Rauner has been the governor, and he ran on, he ran on a reforming kind of platform because and beat the Democrats because of the whole Blagojevich corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And him getting sent to jail and the whole,
Yeah, he pushed the hot buttons that there's going to change.
And so he came in, but because the Illinois, Congress is all Democrat, they've been fighting him. I mean, we've gone 3 or 4 years almost without a budget in Illinois. So nothing has been really accomplished in the 4 years that Rauner has been governor because it's been a stalemate.
Yeah.
So you've already seen that, sometimes it's not these outsiders that make a difference. And maybe you want somebody with a little experience and a little savvy.
A little bit of know-how and a little bit of ways around politics.
And has some of these previous relationships that even if you are ideologically opposed, you can still sit in a room and have some compromise on some issues to get some results done. But we're constantly, and I just found this so great. We're always looking for some new outsider that's going to shake things up. And then in Trump's case, when he shakes it up, everybody gets crazy because he's shaking it up.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we know what we want at all.
Mm-hmm.
But here's
But bottom line is we don't want the same old, but like you said, people then went for something different, and then they weren't happy with that. So I don't know where you how you please people anymore, you know?
So all I have to say at the end of the day of this is, you know, I don't know. You know, I'm not a huge Tony Preckwinkle fan or not, but at least I'm happy that my Sprecher's grape soda, which really, you know, I had a real case to make because Sprecher's, my delicious Sprecher's grape soda, which really began my whole crusade against the pop tax.
Right, you had a cause. Right?
I had a cause, even though I've never been a big pop drinker at all. As I said when I initially started this, you know, like 4 months before, I discovered this delicious Sprecher's and became a pop fan for the first time in my life. And then 3 months later, there was this new tax. And I'm like, wait a minute, I just got into pop, and now you're taxing me? And then the worst part is Sprecher's comes in 16-ounce bottles.
So that's a lot of money you're paying.
Yeah, so, you know, that's four times, you know, that's 16 times four extra cents. So any kind of sale that I would ever get on my four-pack was quickly eliminated.
And remember, we were even talking about doing an underground railroad because I'm in DuPage County, right, of me running soda out to your house.
Oh, the trucks that your father owned. We made millions.
We smuggled molasses from Canada. Made a fortune.
Made a fortune. Your father, too. And that's a Godfather reference, folks, if you want to find that. Just look up, what was it, Hyman Roth.
Yeah, Hyman Roth was talking about the old days, yeah.
Bringing Sprecher's over the Cook County line.
Mick did that for Jim. Made a fortune.
Made a fortune. So at the end of the day, once again, we get exactly what we want, which is exactly the same thing we had before.
Right.
But I am just amazed that this pop tax, which I thought would be a major issue, and as I said, if there was any kind of creativity and any kind of enthusiasm, I mean, I hope I run into this Fioretti somewhere. Mm-hmm. Somewhere I will definitely walk up to this guy and say, "What were you thinking, or what were you not thinking?" Is really the question.
Yeah.
And how did you not walk around with a can of pop or a bottle of Sprecher's everywhere you went?
Yeah, and hand them out and say, "Hey, see, remember that tax?"
Oh, jeez.
Well, here's the good news. To tie everything together, and in fact, in case your podcast listeners don't know, this year at Lollapalooza, Jim will be manning the Sprecher's grape soda booth.
Yeah, I'm going to give away Sprecalooza.
Sprecher-calooza. You know, we have a soda papa-palooza.
Right, Sprecher-palooza. Well, Mick, it was so great to talk to you. It always is. Whenever you have an extra hour to lend us here, I hope you will indulge.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, pal. Always a pleasure, and we'll see what happens this summer with Lollapalooza. And again, in the fall will be the election stuff, but we'll definitely be touching base, and always happy to do it with you, pal.
All right, long live rock, and this Sprecher's on me.
You got it.
Take it easy. And that wraps up another episode, number 98 of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic, right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. My name is Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. Hope you had a good time. I certainly did. This has been Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.